do have the advantage in making my presentation today that the title that I was given was to talk about economics and agriculture beyond cotton, so I'm not going to say anything at all about cotton today, which is a real advantage. I am going to talk to you today, though, quite a bit about what we see is going on in the general economy. And as I do this, I'm going to use a set of graphics out of a group called the Chart Store. I've become this guy's greatest advertising agent since I discovered him about 6 months or so ago. This guy only costs about $400 a year, and he updates these charts on an almost weekly basis. And they show up really spiffily on your desktop computer or on your laptop computer. They show up really poorly in front of a large group. Which means then that we just need to kind of take a little bit more time as we go through these graphics in order to kind of explain what's being shown there and the information that's being being provided. Now, the information on this graph, this happens to be the capitalization of the world stock market. If you put all the various different markets together, the New York Exchange, NASDAQ, put them all together, added them up, you'll notice in the dates that we've got growing across the bottom of the scale here, all the way over to your far right, sorry, your far left would be 1995, and then this is actually the end of October 2008 over here on the far right as this we fall off this cliff. The peak up there at the top of that number happens to be the end of October of 2007, and that's when the global stock markets maximized the value of their capitalization at just over $63 trillion, that's with a T. We're saying trillion a lot more. Have you noticed that lately? That, you know, we kind of blew right through the billions and the hundred billions. We just moved right to trillions. But $63 trillion of global stock market capitalization at the end of October 2007. At the end of October 2008, and the numbers come up a little bit since then, but at the end of October 2008, global stock market capitalization was down to a little over $33 trillion of market capitalization. That's 30 trillion with a T dollars of wealth of capitalization that just went. This is an effect, a special effect. Ready? Okay. Because it did. You know, it is the economy all that? I mean, were the things and was our vision of the planet that much that far out of line at the end of October 2007? And are we that much more correct at the end of October 2008? That's what the market believes, and that's, you know, and the market's never wrong. One of the things that, of course, is certainly one of the ways that this is showing up certainly is in our job performance here in the United States. And my strong expectation is that we're going to see further job losses. These gray bars that you see show up here, and this one only goes back to December of 1999 over here on the far left. These are monthly changes in non-farm payrolls. This is how many jobs the rest of the economy either gained or lost. And if you're above that line, obviously we gain jobs. And you'll see some of the high points there back over here in early 2000s or whatever, that, you know, the peak year there picked up about, or peak month there, I should say, picked up about 500,000 jobs. We moved through the middle 2000s or so. That's its kind of middle of this bell, if you will, here. You know, picking up an average of, you know, 200, 300, never quite got up to 400,000 jobs a month or so, but had very significant job growth there through the mid-2000s. And then that gray bar starts starting in December of 2007, this kind of solid gray bar over here on the far side when we moved into a recession. You know, you might remember that, or you might not know that the National Bureau of Economic Research is charged with, and I don't know who it is that woke up and made them God that particular day, but they have the responsibility for determining when our economy hits its peaks and when it hits its lows. And they have determined that, yes, and this is going to be news to you, you probably didn't know this, that in December of 2007, the economy went into a recession. And again, they made that announcement about two or three weeks or so ago. Now, you know, to their defense, and I know the guy who runs that committee, and he's a very sharp guy and a very nice guy and very knowledgeable guy. But understand that, you know, like the National Weather Service, we've got folks in the National Weather Service whose job it is to forecast the weather, is to tell you what the weather's going to do tomorrow. But we've also got folks in the National Weather Service whose job it is to tell you that yesterday it did, in fact, rain 1.26, you know, 1 2/10 of an inch yesterday, and that's their job, is to report that. And it's NBER's job to tell you that it did, in fact, go into recession yesterday or the month before. So understand that there is some reasons why they end up being a little bit behind behind real time, if you will, as these announcements are made. But we have been, for the course of the last several months, over a year now, basically, as you can see from this graph, you know, killing off jobs in the employment sector pretty substantially on a month-by-month basis. We're probably going to end up losing, or when the numbers do finally come out for December, it won't surprise me that over the course of the last year, we lost upwards of 2 million jobs in 2008. And I think our strong expectation is that we're going to continue to see job losses as we move through the early months of 2009 or so, that there's a lot of factors. You're hearing the same press reports that I am of massive layoffs, of very significant restructuring. We're going to have very significant restructuring going on in the financial sector, nothing else. If you happen to be somebody working in the financial sector in New York, you're probably worried at this point in time. Certainly on the automobile side, we've had very substantial declines. And this data goes all the way back over here. This far edge over here on the left is 1967. So there's a lot of data here. And again, these gray bars that are laid on these graphics across are when we were in recessions at periods of times in the past. So you can see earlier recessions show up there, the one that we had at the early 2000s, the one that we had in early 19, or in the late 19, or I'm sorry, late 1980s, early 1990s, et cetera, et cetera. The thing I want you to notice is these are domestic sales of, or domestic automobiles and light truck sales. And I want you to notice that black line ends up hitting about a little less than about 8 million units of sales or so. You'll see that over on the either left or right axis there. Hits about 8 million sales for November of 2008. And you've got to go all the way back to the early 1980s or so where you get that low a level of automobile sales. So again, if you're working in the automotive industry, you know, your expectation, and I have not heard of, even though we have already made some moves and tried to do some things to bail out GM and Chrysler, and we've provided some additional monies to GMAC, and they're now back to where they're doing 0% financing and that kind of stuff, you know, that we've still not seen a noticeable pickup, in fact, no pickup at all yet in automobile sales. Whether we will by the time we're out 2 or 3 months or not remains to be seen, but, you know, we're basically told the folks from Chrysler when they left for Christmas vacation in the middle of December, you know, don't plan on coming back to like the middle of January, and in fact maybe we'll call you and don't you call us kind of thing, and we'll have to wait and see how Chrysler comes out of all that activity. But again, when we think back on job creation, the ability for the economy to kind of get itself going again, you know, this is clearly one indicator of just how slow and how what a crisis the economy has managed to work its way into. Commodity prices, you know, this is the middle of December. We've moved back up a little bit since then. But again, commodity prices and particularly energy costs, and this is a bright spot, if you will, for most of the economy, have significantly collapsed. If you want to talk about a major stimulus package, this is a major stimulus package for the general economy. You think about the stimulus package that we passed back in early 2008, you can almost track to the dime the amount of money that was provided by that stimulus package in those direct checks, and the amount of the increase that we paid in gasoline costs during the surge in prices that we had there before. Every penny increase in the price of gas increases the cost of gasoline or liquid fuels, if you will, back out to the consumer by about $1.4 billion. That's with a B, not with a T. But you know, so kind of think about that you know, we went from you know, roughly $2.50 bucks a gallon or so up to $4. You know, it doesn't take very long to kind of work out that calculus and understand how many months it was up and things of that nature, that it was just almost a straight transfer from the stimulus checks to the energy companies. We've also, and here are our single housing family starts. This graph over here on the far left comes back over to 1959. And it's interesting if you kind of go out and look and just do a Google search on house fire numbers. And surprisingly enough, the Center for Disease Control collects this data or keeps this data. I don't know why, but they do. And so if you go out and look at this at their data, they will tell you that in 2006, which is the last year that they've got the data recorded or online or Google searchable, So that means it has to be the last official data, right? If that's all Google will give you back. They will tell you that in 2006 that the United States, that fire departments around the nation responded to a total of 406,000 house fire calls. All right? Now, I want you to notice here the number of housing starts that we had on an annualized basis in November of 2008, last month for which we have data. 441,000 housing starts. So we have finally gotten to the stage. Now, you know, did you lose all 400,000 homes that were, you know, that the fire departments went out to? Probably not. But, you know, you're now almost down to the stage where you're just building enough houses to replace those that you lose. I also want you to notice that there's no point in time on this graphic where the number of monthly housing starts is as low as it was in November of 2008. And that's going all the way back to 1959. All right? If you talk about an industry that has just kind of collapsed upon itself, this is certainly an industry that has done that. I also think if we actually kept track of all the workers, both legal and illegal, that we would talk about unemployment numbers in the United States that would be significantly higher than what they are today. That those workers, particularly in this industry, kind of came in, filled a lot of needs, and they've now gone home because we don't need them. So again, this is an industry that understand that we need to create just because of population growth. You know, kids are getting older, they're moving out of the house, yay! You know, that kind of stuff. That they're out and creating their own new households. And we need to create, we need to add about 1.5 to 2 million new housing units, apartments, whatever form you want to call them, a year to kind of keep up with that population growth. So if we're down to the stage where we're just replacing our new houses by our current, you know, based on what we report in terms of fires, the CDC reports in terms of fires, then we're down to the stage now where things are, now to the stage where we can actually begin to draw down inventory. And you could think that by the time we were 6 to 9 to 12 months or so, certainly 12 months down the road or so, that this is a part of the industry that may begin to kind of find bottom. I don't think we found bottom yet, but we may find bottom. This is probably the most telling graphic of this entire set, because there's just lots of information on this graphic. And this goes all the way back over here on the far left to 1987, and again up to just 2 weeks or so ago on the far right. This is the three-month LIBOR rate, and you're going to see LIBOR talked about on MSNBC or the Fox News Network or whatever it is that you happen to watch, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning when you just can't quite get to sleep and you're watching those numbers scroll across the top of the screen. The LIBOR is the London Interbank Offer Rate. This is basically the rate that banks on kind of a global basis charge themselves to lend money to each other, to the bank lending to another bank. And what I want you to notice here is not so much the level, and in fact the level of those interest rates you'll see, and the LIBOR rate is the blue line, is the top line that's showing up here, not the yellow line that we'll talk about here in just a minute. Notice that it's not so much the level of that rate, but it's the gap between that rate and this brown line on the bottom, which is the three-month T-bill rate, that it's that gap that really caused an awful lot of concern. Historically, that gap has run about 55 basis points. But when we got into this kind of economic crisis, certainly about the beginning of September or so, notice that that spread jumped up to where it was better than about 450 basis points. Now, you know, this is a bank lending to another bank. And when banks get to the stage where they don't have any faith in each other, and when you think about what paper they had in reserve, what they had, you know, backing up what the bank could and couldn't do, it probably made a lot of sense that the banks were not willing to lend to each other. Because think about that as all kind of basically mortgage-backed currencies and things of that nature, mortgage-backed paper. That it probably made a lot of sense that they decided that they didn't want to lend each other. So they lacked faith in each other. The other graphic, the other line that I want you to look at here is that bottom one, is that orange line, and that is the three-month T-bill rate. And I want you to notice how low that is. Again, we've now got the Fed operating under the notion that their target rate is someplace between 0.5 percentage point. We have absolutely had more than one trade, more than one tick of the of the market, if you will, where we actually had negative interest rates. And what does that tell you? That basically tells you that everybody else on the planet is now to the stage where they have faith in absolutely nothing. That the only thing they have faith in is the federal government to hold their money for them. And they won't even charge the federal government. They won't even take any money from the federal government to just hold their money. Just make sure you'll hang on to it for me, Gary, because I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to want it, and I want to make sure you'll give it back. That's all they're asking for at this point in time. Not any return on investment or whatever. So when you think about that, there's two very strong indicators of faith here that I think show up. One, you'll notice that the gap has begun to close between the LIBOR rate and Fed rate, but still that the Fed rate is hanging down there right at zero, just about as low as it can possibly be. Now you might say, why is all that money coming to the United States? And it's basically because as poor a faith as folks have in our economy at this point in time, their faith in everybody else's economy is that much worse. And that certainly shows up in other ways that I don't think we'll get time to talk about, but the other place where we're having a real lack of faith in is the ability for companies to go out and find money as well. We have all of our faith now placed in the U.S. government to hold our money for us, and we're not willing to take any risk whatsoever. And I think that shows up probably best here in this gap between the Moody's. This is BAA paper. This is not the best paper. It's not the worst paper by any stretch of the imagination. But it's not the best paper that a guy could go off and buy from different companies to provide them with loans or bonds with a different company. And I want you to notice again that how big that gap is between a 30-year Treasury note and these long-term Moody's BAA paper that a company would write for you. That gap is as big as it has ever been. So it's just difficult for companies to go out and get a hold of money. This is where the automakers' problem really lies. That they can't go out in the commercial market and get money. They've either got to go to the government or they've got to chew through their own reserves. And they've been chewing through their own reserves to the stage that, you know, you can almost figure out the hour of the day when they're going to have to say, okay, that's it, boys, we're done, we're going home. We could talk about exchange rates, but given that we're kind of need to move through time here, let me move on from that. Three factors that I would say are going to move the consumers. First off, when you go back and kind of look historically, when we've had large drops in wealth, we only have one other data point that shows as large a drop in wealth, household wealth, as we've got going on at this point in time, and that was back in the Depression. But when you look at kind of more modest drops in wealth, every dollar drop in wealth, consumer cut back on their spending on stuff the following year by about a nickel, and the year after that by about another nickel or so as well. Whether or not those numbers still hold or not, I think is subject to a lot of conversation. I think that probably represents a lower bound, if you will, on how much consumer spending will decline in this situation. Also, when you go back and look at credit reductions, when we've had every 1% drop in real credit growth, tends to end up the following year with the GDP dropping by about 0.33%. And Lord knows we've had a very, very significant drop in credit. And again, we talked about this bump that we get, the stimulus we get from the drop in energy costs. You know, based on kind of where we were in the fall, you would have expected then that with that drop in household wealth, that we would have talked about a $275 to $300 billion hit in 2009 because of that drop in household wealth. And again, it's value of the home as well as value of equities. Those two together make up about 90% of household net wealth. So, one question that I would have, you came back and told me that you think the drop is bigger, that it's going to be more than a nickel per dollar, that it's going to be more like a dime, and you know that this number ought to be more like $400, $500, or $600 billion reduction in spending by the consumer next year, you wouldn't get a whole lot of argument out of me. But based on the historical studies that are a little bit more moderate, those are the kind of numbers you get back. Credit effect, about $225 billion. Gasoline effect, probably coming back and adding back about $200 billion to the good, and it might even go a little bit bigger than that. Put all that together and you're talking about at least a 2% drag, if not larger than that, on real GDP in 2009, with carryover effects out into 2010. I think you get beyond 2010 though, and things are going to be, and we'll talk about a timeline here in just a minute, but one other variable that I think is causing me an awful lot of concern and some other folks an awful lot of concern. You know, historically, Banks are required to hold a particular amount of money in reserve with the Fed that they can point to say, we've got this money and therefore we can go out and lend money to other folks. And historically, that number has run in the neighborhood. Actually, this says required reserves. That should have said excess reserves historically as well. Runs about $40 to $50 billion or so. In November, because of the infusion of cash from the Treasury, that number has gone from this kind of historical $50 to $60 billion number upwards to north of $600 billion of excess reserves that the banks are just sitting on, that they're not loaning, they're just sitting on. Also, if you take that beyond that and look at, and this is a very narrowly defined money base or money supply, but a very narrow definition of the money supply, but I want you to also notice that we've almost doubled the money supply, this narrow definition of money supply, in 2 months as well. There are lots of things out there that I think 12, 16, 18 months or so down the road that I think are going to put some very significant inflationary pressure back into the system at the same time that we're trying to do things to move things along as well. So to kind of wrap up here, since I'm down to about my last minute or so, I think we move through the first probably two or three quarters of 2009, continue to talk about job losses, continue to talk about a very soft economy. But by the time we get out to the end of 2009, we have had a very substantial reduction in interest rates. And sooner or later, that effect, we're going to start lending money. The system's going to finally bust itself loose. The system's going to start to work again. We're going to start lending again. And at as low as the rates are, I think we're going to see a very substantial kind of kick from lower interest rates in the economy out toward the end of 2009. Typically, that takes 6-9 months or so for that to begin to work its way through. Again, that you could make the case even at the middle of 2009, it'd begin to pop up. I don't know that I go quite that close. But out by the time we get out to the end of 2009, early 2010, I think you talk about the system from the interest rate effects begin to kind of kick itself up. Plus, sooner or later, I think we're probably also going to end up with a pretty substantial stimulus package. And I think one of the large portions of that stimulus package will be infrastructure development, will be contracts, will be kind of job creation out of those contracts by state transportation departments and things of that nature. Think about the timeline that it takes for Congress to finally get done, for those contracts to actually get let with the states, for the states to actually get those bid out and back on the ground and things working or so, and you're probably out into September, October or so before that job creation happens as well. So again, that'd put you out fourth quarter 2009, first quarter 2010 before those begin to kick in. I do think once you get beyond that though, again, that big, big surge that we've got in money supply and in all this money that we've just dumped into the banks is going to end up being a problem and is going to come back and be something we're going to have to watch for very, very carefully. And my stoplight is on up here, so I will stop. Sorry, folks.
Thank you very much.